Seid gegrüßt da draußen. Hier ist das Politopia-Magazin für euch wie jeden Mittwoch 16 bis 17 Uhr. Und auch heute würde ich gerne mit euch über Themen sprechen, die uns alle bewegen, jetzt die letzten paar Monate. Es geht natürlich auch jetzt um Jahre. Kriege, Waffen werden produziert, Sozialleistungen werden gestrichen. Und wir würden gerne mit Menschen zusammenkommen, mit ihnen sprechen über Gesellschaft, Soziales und wie läuft es in den anderen Ländern. Heute habe ich hier zu Gast Or. Sie kommt aus Israel. Ich freue mich sehr, dass ihr da seid. Hallo.
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 Wir werden jetzt tatsächlich erstmal umswitchen, weil mit Or kann ich nur in Englisch sprechen. Very welcome, Or. And thank you that you find time to come here and do our interview now in English for all our listeners and as well for your work. Please tell me something about your very personally, your profession and maybe your motivation to talk with me.
My profession is, well, I will say first of all, an activist. I do activism for many subject for many years. From humans to animal and climate, professional therapist in psychodrama. And my motivation is, I think, people, knowledge is power. And I think if we spread knowledge, we can make better struggles and we can hopefully create a better alternative and a better world.
You are now here in Germany, and you met maybe some people here. What do you think about, like, meeting us here in Germany? What do you think about us here as a society? Maybe not compared to Israel and Australian society, but do you have any words for us?
No, I find it hard to put a society in one objective. I met really nice people. I met some not nice people. It's just a different culture, so it's interesting always for me to get to know new cultures. It's very hectic days this time, and there is a lot of hard things going on and a lot of extremeness, so people take very rough positions, and that's felt.
If I'm thinking now and going now to the east, down south in Israel, you live in Israel, you grow up there, you do your profession there. So what do you think for you? How is the maybe direct question again, the society in Israel? How's the people there? And what do you think, like, I mean, Africa is on the border, Asia is on the border. How is it like for Israeli people or even the Egypts? And how is there the situation, the energy for the society, how they're living there?
That's a big question. There is a lot of levels to answer it. I think if I'll start with the financial, unfortunately, Israel is a very expensive country to live in, but the salaries are not as high. So many people struggle financially, and the gaps between people that earn a lot of money to people that earn what is average to earn is really big. A lot of people think that it's a very rich society economically, but that's not really the situation. Well, it's a very diverse society because you have people from all around the world. You have people from Central Africa, and you have people from North Africa, and you have people from East Asia and Central Asia, and you have Europeans, and you have, you know, South America, Central America, North America. You have everything, and I think in that perspective it's very beautiful to have all these kind of cultures in one place. But also, well, like in a lot of other cultures, you also have the hierarchy between these different backgrounds, and you also have the fact that Israel started as a colony. And it means that from the first day, or even before the creation of Israel, we live in a constant war situation. We live in a constant occupation, colonialism situation. And that obviously affects the society. Every society that creates harm is going to be affected by it. So in one hand, I can say it's a warm society for the good and for the bad. So if we talk about the parts I feel more close to, is I feel in a way that I can talk to people more about feelings. I can shout when I'm angry. I can have long hugs. Family is a very important part of my life, and we're very close, and most people around me, family is something that is in the base of their life. And it also means that in times of bad things going on, people get themselves to help the rest of the society. The government is not doing any good job about it, but even in COVID time, when people were sick or closed in their house or couldn't work or couldn't, you know, do their everyday life, there was a lot of people creating social structures to help each other, and still till today. So in many ways, there is good things in the society. In other ways, it's a country that majority of people are connected to the army, if it's are going to be in the army or was in the army or believe in the army and so on. And when you have to do that, it means that you are grown up on militaristic, violent, patriarchic standards. And that's unhealthy and destructive. And then you have higher numbers of people that kill or use violence against their partners or in their family, or you have people when they fight on a parking lot beat each other up. And yeah, well, it's a part of also being a warm society, but I think when you grow up to believe in an army, you believe that violence is an answer to conflict, and then it becomes something that it's much easier for you to use. Or even more than that, it might be the answer you know for anything. You have a problem, I'm going to be aggressive about it. So, yeah, so for good and for bad. Mm. One thing that is important to talk about within the Israeli society is not only the hierarchy there is between Arabs or black people to white people, there is also the fact that within Israel there is Palestinians. There is Palestinians in Palestine, in the territories that were occupied in 67, and there is Palestinian within the 48, the territories that were occupied in the 48 that have Israeli citizenship. And these Palestinians are a part of society on the paper, but get different social interactions. The racism is way too high. Also, their economical status is affected by it. They are, in many different ways, a second-hand citizens, and they have less rights. A lot of bureaucratic, for example, will be only in Hebrew and not in Arabic, and not all of them will speak Hebrew. Even teachers, when they need to give report to the educational office, they need to write it in Hebrew. So it's this thing within the society that also, in many ways, are connected and strong, but in other ways very destructive towards anything they don't see as a part of them. If it's Palestinian in the West Bank or Gaza, or if it's Palestinian within the country. In many ways for me, it's weird.
Why?
Because how can you be, it doesn't fit in my mind, how can you be so caring about what you count as Israel, and in the same time be so destructive to anything that you don't see as a part of you, even though on the paper they are a part of the country.
Interesting that kind of two countries living like since years together, actually, but still as a straight line in between them. What do you mean about social barriers got the Palestine people in Israel?
So Palestinians usually are not called to join the army. Some do. In general, they're a part of society in a way, but also the enemy of society. It's a very complex situation to be a Palestinian with an Israeli citizenship, because the Jewish Israeli society will see you a lot of time as traitor or less good. And the Palestinian society within Palestinian territories will see you as this normalizer, the one that have better life because you don't live under everyday occupation. And it's from the small things of the everyday life, how comfortable you feel when you walk in the public sphere. And it's the big things of your identity and what do you count yourself as and what do you want to be loyal to or wish for even. If you want to vote in the for the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, or not, do you feel part of who should vote? Or is there anyone even in the government that you feel that is showing what you believe in or caring for what your needs are? Yeah, it's many different levels. If we talk about the implication of Israelis that didn't do the army, the reality is that most Israelis didn't do the army or didn't finish their army service. And a lot of people feel the need to lie about it or to hide the fact that they didn't do the army or didn't finish their army service because the society is very militaristic. The army is counted as a holy thing. It's like a holy cow. It's taboo to be against it. So people feel shame. And they feel like if someone will know they didn't do the army, they will not want them. If they're men, they will not want a woman, for example, and won't want a man that is not a manly man that didn't do the army. Or a boss will not want a worker that doesn't have values. And when they say values, it's specifically the army education of values. So you need to be, for example, a manager that is strict with your workers. And only if you were a commander in the army, you will be a good manager or a good boss. So people will be asked on these things. Even in bars and social interactions, people talk about what they did in the army. And the army likes the society and the people of the society to believe that even if they didn't do the army, then they can't do things. So they spread myth around the society that if you didn't join the army, you can't work, you can't go to university, you can't be in the Knesset, in the Israeli parliament, you can't be a doctor, you can't have a driving license. All these myths that they bring around our lies, because we have doctors and we have people in the parliament and we have people in universities and with mortgage and that drive on the road that didn't do the army or didn't finish their army service. The wish of the army to want you to believe in it is that you won't question not going to the army. You will be too afraid to not go to the army because then you, God forbid, will have all these things that will not able you to have a future. And in practice, it's just, yeah, it's not true. Another thing that is around that is how militaristic the society is and how much it circles our everyday life. And it's around different things. We're talking now on the radio. Most army channels in Israel are army units that are being led by the army spokesperson. We have TV shows, we have music, we have books that are all around these army subjects. And we perceive ourselves, or the government perceive us before the army, or during the army, or after the army. And you even put this sometimes in your CV. Am I in this point, or that point? And this militaristic kind of way of living. So it makes a society that is based on militaristic values. If you are brought up in this indoctrination that one day you're going to be a soldier, you're also brought up on patriarchic values that manly or how society see men characters, then that's the right characters. You should be a person that knows how to stand and how to fight. And fights will usually connect to some kind of aggression or violence. And you need to be that way to be, quote, good soldier and a good fighter. So you're brought up to use and see a lot of violence being used. And that affects, for example, how you talk to people that give you service when your internet gets stuck. And it's connected to people beating each other for a parking space. And it's connected to what's the kind of education you use within school or kindergartens. And it also affects how you see, like, friends and family. there is so many levels within the everyday life that is affected by this militarization.
So how is that that people who are not in the army, how they go to the university? How is this?
Thankfully enough, the law doesn't allow people to not accept someone to work or to university if they didn't do the army. That is under discrimination. So they're not supposed to discriminate on it, and if they do, you can sue them. Practically, people are people, and if people believe in military, it will make them choose within their beliefs. Another thing about the universities and the academy in Israel is that many universities, especially the big ones, have very strong collaboration with the army and with the Office of Homeland Security. And it's connected to funds, and it's connected to research, and it's connected to soldiers that study within the universities. There is specific student housing that is specifically for soldiers that study in universities, and they have CCTV there, and they have army soldier guards protecting that area. It's the pressure that is being put on professors to not talk against the army, to not talk politics, unless it's the politics they want them to talk about, to not research against the army, or something that might sound bad about the army. Even in these things of how the army affects identity, or how the army affects mental situation, individuality, and all of this, it will be very hard, or will put you as a professor in danger if you'll decide to research it. And most chances, the university won't want you to do it, because then they might lose the funds, the millions that they get in funding for researching what the army or the ministry of the Office of Homeland wants you to research. And it also includes the fact that we talked earlier about weapons. It also means that within the universities, you see weapons. It's just scary. If you're a 22-year-old kid that study about something in university and you have a soldier with a gun in your class, you're probably going to feel less comfortable to say what you believe in if it's might be the opposite of what this guy is thinking. So, and maybe another thing to add to it that really influenced the Israeli society is that social struggle and political struggle a lot of times go within the army. So, for example, as a vegan person, when I refused to join the army and sat in jail, these days it was almost impossible to find vegan food in the army or in the army jail. Today, vegan organization did their fight to make sure that you can be vegan and have vegan food when you're a soldier. You even have vegan shoes. You know, it's all these things that the struggles, or queer, for example. When I was young, if you would go to the army and say I'm trans, the army don't know how to handle it, and they will let you out. They examine you. Today, the army have specific bases, and they go through training to know how to deal with trans people, non-binary people, gay people, and even feminism. You know, it's like most armies don't have women, or at least the conscription law is not including women in Israel. It's all genders. So it's including non-binary people, and it's including women. So that's the feminism you grow on. The feminism is not you should have equal rights. Is if you want equal rights, you need to go and fight like any other men and prove that you're equal to men.
Have you been in the army?
No, I refused to join the army, and I refused publicly, so I was put in jail for refusing to join the army.
How long you was in the jail?
It was not that long. It was 4.5 months, which means a much less of jail time than what Palestinian gets if they do something against the law. So it was okay.
Okay. So what kind of jail was it?
When you refuse to join the army, you're being sent to a specific army jail. So it's not for Palestinian, it's not for civilians. And the mission of this jail is to educate the soldiers to be a better soldier. So when you refuse, it's like this kind of abstract situation where you sit with people that are soldiers. The guards of the jail is commanders, and you call them commanders. And they try to make sure you're going to do everything right. So you have to clean the way they clean in the army. You need to say, yes, commander, no, commander. You need to stand in lines and be counted. And it's all these kind of things that yeah, try to educate you to be a good soldier, and it's obviously not what I'm going to do. So
many people go in the jail because they don't want to go to the army.
Most people sitting in jail are sitting for many different reasons. You know, if you're a soldier and you cross a red line, you go to army jail, like a traffic line. Or if you were too late or you deserted and went home to work for the weekend and no one allowed you to do it, then you go to jail. There is many reasons why you go to jail in the army. The thing is that the majority, the really big majority of people refusing to join the army don't declare their refusal. And the plus of refusing and declaring it is many different things, but one of them is that there is social awareness and international awareness of it. And then you find people that declare their refusal sit less time in jail than people that don't declare their refusal. So yes, you have people, I had people sitting with me in jail that didn't declare but had the same points of view politically as I did, but was not able to have their family, friends, knowing that they refused. They weren't privileged enough to stand against what other people would think or lose friends or having family not wanting to be in interaction with them. Yeah, but not all people that refuse sit in jail, because there is other kinds of examinations to get out of the army that are not through going to jail.
Ich sag jetzt erstmal bis gleich. How you experienced the 7th October?
Well, the 7th of October was a very difficult day. We woke up at 6:20 bit a.m. to alarms, and we ran to a shelter. And slowly, slowly, we started understanding that there is a war and that people are being murdered in the south, in the Nova Party, and people that live in around Gaza had vents going into their villages or towns. People had to close themselves and lock themselves in shelters because when other people from the vents got into their house, they would shoot them, kill them, burn their houses, abuse them, and kidnap them. So it was a very long day and a very, very scary day. And from that day, it was very much felt how people became more, Israeli Jewish people, became more revengeful, less hopeful for peace, less leftist. It's known that history, that disasters make people less peaceful. But it was very sad to see live how people go to all these violent places and revengeful places in their mindsets. The other thing, that 7th of October was not a start of something. 7th of October was an escalation of many years of not only 48, 67, but the last few years it was very much felt how more settlements there are, how settlers are becoming more violent, how settlers that take key pointed in the army send their units to do even more horrible things to Palestinians, how Gaza is becoming the biggest jail in the world and the most populated place, where Israel control everything, where electricity comes in, water, medicine, concrete to build houses, who can go into the water and fish and who can't. Everything is controlled by the Israeli army in Gaza. This escalation in Gaza and in the West Bank, that life for Palestinians there became even worse than what they were before. Especially the last year, as an activist, I can say, felt very scary. Even in the perspective of rules that came out around what can Palestinians do, who can get a visa, what's the standards they're checking, your family, four generations, or if they're checking who is your neighbors, and by that deciding if you can get a visa to Israel and how much they will blackmail you before you get the right to go into Israel and get a job. Taking funerals as a political thing instead of someone is dying and the family and friends wants to be there, it became that whoever goes to the funeral has to get the permission to go there. and there is only a certain amount of people that can go there. So people they love had to choose if their son goes to the funeral or if the brother of the person that dies goes to the funeral. And it's an example to show how it's in big issues and small issues, things became worse. And when things become worse, people become more less hopeful and more easy to go or more drawn into violence. So when people lost so much of their hope and their life for so many years were so horrible in Gaza, this attack of the 7th of October was a reaction to all this horrendous thing that happened before. I don't agree with violence. I think what people did on the 7th of October is horrible. It's not justified. I just understand the political, personal, psychological process that made people go out of these situations and choose violence and choose killing and choose raping and choose abusing and kidnapping.
I'm shocked, actually, about all the things what you was talking about. We hear a lot of things, but it's different than we see and feel and been there. And how was it for you? And how is this now, like, at the moment?
I think for me, since the 7th of October and even before, but even more after, it's a lot of sadness. It's a lot of pain and grief for Palestinians and Israelis that died or got hurt. It's hard to talk about this. It's impossible for me to think anything after the 7th of October without putting inside the fact that thousands of people died in Gaza, million were displaced, people are starving. There is new diseases that people, viruses that were not existing or known before that created there because of the humanitarian crisis that is happening. So for me, being an Israeli that still have to pay taxes because it's not my choice is to pay taxes or not, I know that my money goes to it. So it's not only the grief of all the people that die, it's this horrible feeling that if I want it or not, I'm a part of it. And that increase the need to stop it for me and for the other people that are suffering. And it means that almost 10 months now, I feel exhausted because I can't feel like I can rest. I feel like I have to continue doing because this horrible thing is continuing. And I'm in constant fear. I'm in constant fear to Palestinians that are in the West Bank, that the situation there is going so bad and so much escalation. And I'm in fear of family and families of my friends and friends that are in Gaza at the moment, especially when they can't answer their phone because they lose connection, because there is no electricity to charge their phone. And then if someone doesn't answer you for a week, you don't know if it's because they didn't have battery in their phone or because they're not with us anymore. And that's exhausting for the soul. I also have the fear for people I love and care for that did choose to go and serve in reserve or don't see it as a choice, feel that they're forced to serve there. And then I'm afraid for their life as well. And I'm afraid for the trauma they're going to go through. And I'm afraid for what it does to them as human beings that are going to go back one day to society with all this post-trauma and how it will change even their belief on life or on peace or a future. I do feel and see that the first few months look different than what there is now. In the first few months, people were in their grief, which is very legit and very natural, and were afraid to talk about the war and against the war. Still until today, people are afraid because the consequences of they might lose their job, they might be called as traitors, they might have violence from the police or from right-wing people. And in this, I include Jewish Israelis and Palestinian citizens. Obviously, Palestinian citizens will have it harder. But more and more people are talking against this war. And more people are going out to the street to call for the end of the war and the killing in Gaza. In the last few days, there were even army commanders calling for the end of the war, saying the government wants us to think that this is a war against Hamas. And we need to demolish Hamas. And lately, there was army people saying, you cannot demolish Hamas. this war is not to demolish Hamas, and it's not what it's going to do. And we're just losing power or people by fighting. There is more talk to end of the war. I don't know if the government will listen to these people. I don't know what will happen, but I'm hopeful that it will end and it will end soon. But my real fear is that when it will end, it can end in so many different ways. And we saw in the previous attacks on Gaza that when it just ended and there was just ceasefire, things continue to become worse. And if this war will end the same, I'm scared. So I want the war to be over, but I want it to be over in a way that we're choosing to do something else and that we're putting our resources and our time and our money to help people in Gaza to build their houses, to go out of their trauma, to have water, to have electricity and everything that is needed, because this is going to take time. So I hope that the end of this war will come soon and it will come with actual actions to stop the occupation and get into, I don't know what will happen in the end, but to get to some kind of peace.
I feel in Germany as well, we are still in the drama of the Second World War, and it's already nearly 80 years old. So this kind of, and all wars are bringing people almost in that kind of a long process. What can the listeners do who are listening us now at the moment?
I think each people have their own kind of activism and what they feel that they're able or what they want to do. There is so many ways to fight and struggle. So I'll answer first about myself. So I work for New Profile, which is a feminist anti-militaristic organization. We escort people that made the decision to not join the army or not finish their army service. There is many, 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 many people talking to us since the 7th of October. And we gather information and we spread information about militarization, about arms sales to Israel and from Israel. We educate, we have social media, and I'm a part of these things, and I'm also a part of different actions to call for the end of the war, collaborations, events that are there to talk about it and get more people involved. For the other part of your question, what do I think people here in Germany can do? Again, depends on the person, but I think spreading information is a very important thing. Making sure that the information that you spread is not fake news is also very important. Learning about the different depth and complexity of each situation, because nothing is black and white. It's not all Palestinians against all Israelis. Not all Palestinians want to destroy Israel, and not all Israelis want to destroy Palestine. Learning about this complexity of the different societies is important to understand what can be an alternative. Another thing that I think is very critical to Germany is that Germany has been and still is a big supporter of the occupation, not only politically, but also practically. Germany is selling a lot of arms to Israel. Germany is buying a lot of arms and war technology from Israel. There is collaboration in factories. There is collaboration with Israeli soldiers coming to train police here, selling ways to control activists' phones or reporters' phones. All these things that are happening are fueling the occupation. In the main way of the fueling of the occupation is that Israel sells by proving how well their weapons and technology works. So Germany and France and the US and so many other countries, India, buying weapons from Israel, they're taking part of the occupation. So it's not only the selling, it's also the buying. And it's important to fight them both. Another thing that you can do from here is try to find your way of really being in solidarity. So instead of saying, oh, you're an Israeli, you're not having the right to talk, or, oh, you're a Palestinian, then it means you're automatically anti-Semite. Try to listen to the people and what they've been through and see how you can make a real change by what Palestinians, how they want you to struggle and not decide how Palestinian struggle should look like. And some people, for them, is funding. There is so many foundations that stop their funding to peace activism. So that's also an important thing to do. Money to aid for Gaza or money for organizations that fight the occupation and work Jewish, Israelis and Palestinians together. This work is important before the war, during the war and after this war. We will need to continue this work.
Yeah, I mean, we will put some websites as well on this radio show, so all people who's listening to us can find information or good conversation and good coming together. One of these things what I want really to know, like wartime, and wartime is, I think there is no any person in the world who's interested in war. What kind of action we can do against war and arms and weapons and so on?
One thing that is important for making a just and strong struggle is to also see the connection between the war in Israel-Palestine and the attack on Gaza as a part of what's going on in different countries in the world. People talk about what's happening in Palestine without understanding that, or knowing even what's happening in Sudan. The continuation of killing of people, the huge amount of refugees that run away from there, from Eritrea. People don't know what's happening in Chile now or what's happening in Argentina when the right-wing government is just started and there is a huge inflation, and people don't know what's happening in Myanmar and in Thailand and in India. People don't even know that Turkey is an occupying country. And ignoring these things gives power to the people that win money from war and want war to exist. These people out there, you know, not us. And if we want to do a stronger struggle, we need to see all these things. We need to understand that Palestinians, like Kurdish people, should live in justice and not be occupied. And it's to understand that military, I'll give you an example. Not so long, like a couple of weeks ago, there was an arms fair in France. And they did a very interesting thing. They said Israel is not invited, and they didn't let arm companies of Israel to go into the arms fair. And a lot of activists were like, yay, that's wonderful. But arms fairs are arms fair. Like, selling weapons is destructive. It's machines that kill people and control people. So we shouldn't be so happy just for one country being kicked out of that fairs. We should struggle to have no fairs, no arm fairs, no arm sales.
This is one point, but how can the justice happen worldwide? Israel, Ukraine, Kurdistan, Turkey.
There is already a worldwide organization that try to do very important work and the connections between different wars and oppressions. I can give example of organizations that work within Israel-Palestine, organizations that do collaborations and grassroots work to have Jewish and Israelis and Palestinian meet, talk, learn about the occupation, the colonialism, the situation in Gaza. There is organizations that physically go to Palestinian villages to bring water or dig wells. There is organization that go and walk with Palestinian kids to school so settlers will not attack them. There is organization that work, for example, like us, against militarization. There is organization that work targeting the government and rules to make the rules less racist. There is organizations that do demonstration together in the West Bank or in Israel territories, and real solidarity of deciding on the demonstration together, giving Palestinians the right to choose what slogans are going to be, or when do you start the demonstration, when you stop the demonstration. There is organization that work within the academy and doing researches. There is organizations that work on, again, on social media to get the world involved, because people believe, and I agree with it in a certain way, that if we have stronger international pressure, then Israel cannot continue doing what it's doing as a government and as an army. And that's another thing that is important within these international organizations, to take the information and spread it to people so people will fight and their governments and their decision makers to call for the end of the war, to call for the end of the occupation, to not sell arms to anywhere. I think it's very important to work in communities. Doing activism can be very hard and create burnout. So when we create solidarity communities, we can make a better change, and we can also work on ourselves For example, many countries are brought up on colonialist concepts. So when we work together, we can do work of decolonization of our perspective. We can do de-learning of what we were taught. We can hug each other. You know, if you go to demonstrations here, sometimes the police is so violent and people get hurt and people get arrested and people get into hospitals. And if we don't work as a community, then you just lose people. People are hurt and your solidarity for, I don't know, a river that is going to be destructive, but you're not solidarity to the person that is struggling with you. And I'm an optimist person, so I believe we will get to an alternative. But to get to this alternative, we need to know how will it look. So if we struggle the way we want the alternative to look like, we're walking faster towards there. I can say that I hear a lot of people talking these days about violent struggle. And as I said earlier, it's not that I don't understand why people choose violent struggle. But if we look at the alternative, we don't want this alternative to be with weapons. We don't want this alternative to be with destruction. If we have the choice and we have the privilege, and most people in Europe have that privilege, then let's choose to work in ways that is the alternative we want to create. If it's not being chauvinist to person that fight with us, or not being aggressive to the person that fights with us, and not eating meat, and not going to a demonstration, drinking all your beers and throwing it on the ground, like, you know, destruction of climate and so on. It's our everyday life that we can create by it the alternative, and how we educate ourselves, how we educate our comrades, and how we educate our kids. And to be personal about it, I hear people saying to me since the 7th of October, people that have never been to Israel or to Palestine, people that don't have friends there or don't have families there, telling me that they can't talk to their uncle or they can't talk to their cousin because they're pro-Israelis. How can they be in a family with someone pro-Israeli? And I'm like, this is your family. If you cannot work with your family, if you cannot help people understand different things or be patient to listen to different kinds of perspective, how are you supposed to talk to anyone else? Where are you starting in? Starting within our family, starting within our friends group, being patient to each other, being forgiveness. There is so much grief that is now bubbling from earth. You know, it's everywhere. Let's be patient to another person's grief and not judge their grief. Listen to them and then they can continue to somewhere else. Any human being that lost someone in their life know that it doesn't end like this. And when you grieve, you do really fucked up things. You know, even after a breakup, we have these friends that we know after a breakup is going to be a selfish friend or is going to be an asshole or take your alcohol from your cabin. We know this and we forgive them because we care for them and we know they're grieving. So we have so many people grieving around us and we're not patient to it. If they're Palestinian, if they're Israelis, if they're Americans, we don't give that space. That's also part for me of how to move to the alternative. Understand this grief, hold it, and then see how we can go somewhere else together.
Mm. Nice words. Thanks a lot, Ar, for your great words here for us and for Politopia Magazine here in Frankfurt. I hope I will get all this information for a new profile and connect people here with maybe some of these action and activist groups. So yeah, thanks a lot. Nice greetings to Israel, to people there who's working with you, and everything the best.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye. Ja, das war jetzt das Politopia-Magazin hier heute mit einer Aktivistin aus Israel, New Profile. Und wir bedanken uns erstmal fürs Zuhören. Wie ihr wisst, wird diese Sendung auch gleich morgen Donnerstag zwischen 14 und 15 Uhr wiederholt. Bis dahin würde ich sagen, habt ihr eine gute Zeit. Wir versuchen weiterhin hier euch zu informieren. Schaltet wieder ein am kommenden Mittwoch, wieder zwischen 16 und 17 Uhr. Wir freuen uns und sagen jetzt Tschüss.